Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My guest today, Erica Arvold. Erica Arvold, I'm pleased to say, is a great friend, although we haven't spoken in quite a while. She is the founder of Arvold, A-R-V-O-L-D, and is a casting director, producer, and am I allowed to say director as well, Erica?
You are indeed.
Okay. And it's great to hear your voice. Welcome to the show, by the way. This is a treat. Yes. Okay. I'm glad it's mutual. Okay. Listen, let me tell you, we'll get to talking and I'll forget to introduce. Erica has been a guest instructor and speaker for over 20 years, sharing insights from a career as a casting director and producer that spans major studio films, television shows, and multimedia projects. Erica has had the honor of collaborating with and serving students and faculty at universities, schools, and acting studios across the country, including the University of Virginia, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Regent University, George Mason University, Longwood University, the Robert Mello Studio, Actors Arsenal, Train Cadence Theater at Virginia Repertory, and the Renaissance School, among others. Erica, I think the last time we talked, you were focusing on the southeast region of the U.S. This was a new and wonderful development in the age of casting digitally. Are you now returning to a mid-Atlantic region focus, or is that simply the focus of your acting extravaganza on February 18th in Richmond, Virginia?
Now. One is a production company, which we do start to finish production as well as production support for visiting jobs. And then lastly, but not least as important, is our education arm. And I'm incredibly passionate about sharing these luxurious years of experience that I've had in both casting as well as production with people who are, you know, wanting to continue to study. And, you know, frankly, I have always a thirst for learning and discovering new things. And I'm a very curious person, always will be, I hope, until the day I die. So this education branch has really been developing quickly over the last couple of years. And we started very humbly in Charlottesville and then expanded to Richmond. And now we are regularly traveling to Atlanta and is discussing a couple of Los Angeles and New York opportunities as well. So to answer your question, it really is nationwide. And with the university appearances and guest teaching, that's really encouraged us as well because, you know, sometimes I feel like, oh, I'll have this experience, I'll share it. But I really am starting to get the feedback and feel like I, you know, have a lot to offer. I am a master teacher and know, everything from fictionalization and character, you know, deep character development, but also what it's like to budget a film or what it's like to work with a director of photography and things like that. So to answer your question, the acting extravaganza is a very specific class that we are holding in Richmond this coming weekend, and it is absolutely for the beginner or seasoned actor, and we will be probably drawing some participants from other states, but the majority of our audience will indeed be from the Mid-Atlantic.
Okay, and I certainly didn't mean to imply you weren't national, because I mean, you are everywhere, and how you are a master teacher. I've worked with you in that capacity as well. I've seen you with students with a range of experience, and how you reach them and find out who they are and bring that out of them for the best performance of a character. So for whatever it's worth, I vote for you too as a master teacher. I also knew you as a casting director, and I would say in auditions, I know you've heard me say this, casting directors are not always the best directors, but you are certainly the exception to that, because even in an audition situation, your direction brings out, I know, speaking personally, my best performance, there's no question. How do you find other actors in the audition situation, when they're probably nervous or whatever, how do you find their reactions to you in that combo of casting director and director, giving them the direction they need to book the show?
Well, thank you, Marcello. This is such kind things to say, and I really enjoy it, and it comes from a place of exploration, and I think one of the most serious parts of my job as a casting director, as well as an educator, is to create a safe place where people can dive deep and explore and discover something new about the character or about the scene, and be comfortable enough that they don't have to do what they quote-unquote practice doing.
Exactly.
That preparation and that practice is maybe their anchor or their foundation, but I want them to fly in the other, you know, in another setting. And so, it's a fun, you know, it's not an exercise, it's what I do, but I approach it as an exercise. It's always an experiment. Let's see what can happen. Let's play. Let's discover something together. And, you know, I may give a direction that is not at all what I intended, and yet the actor comes up with something absolutely brilliant and takes a left turn, and oh my gosh, that's wonderful. And so it's always an unknown. And I think being comfortable in that place of unknown is really the key to spontaneous work.
Yes. So we know there are a lot of projects. You're never not busy. You're on the road now, as a matter of fact, from one busy place back to your headquarters. You are still primarily headquartered in Charlottesville, Virginia?
Yes, our headquarters is indeed in Charlottesville, Virginia, and that's where I live and with my family, and I don't want that to change. I really enjoy living in Charlottesville.
I have to say that too. I'm not in Charlottesville full time anymore, but I love, as I've often said to guests, when I'm on southbound 29 and I make that turn and see the Blue Ridge Mountains for the first time, it's like, oh, this is great. This is great. It's like inhaling some degree of renewal. How's that? it you know, it's just such a beautiful place. Yeah, exactly. Tell us about Arvold on YouTube.
Oh, boy, this is fun. You know, we have a channel on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's quite common now, but when we started it a number of years ago, it was truly an experiment. And really, it was a bit self-serving, because I would get the same questions again and again, whether it was via email or via phone call, and coupled with the fact that Richard Warner and I would sit and kind of just brainstorm, what did we want this education department to do? How did we want to go about it? What subject did we want to tackle, et cetera? And Amy, our director of our education program, would sit with Richard and I as we bantered back and forth. And Amy said, you know, I have to tell you, I think I'm not the only maybe we should just support you traveling back and forth. And so coupled with the questions that I had received, we thought, okay, great. If we can answer the question once and point people in that direction, mm-hmm. I don't have to go through my whole diatribe of 10 minutes answering it every time something calls, you know?
Yes.
So,
sure.
And but what happened was it just became such an amazing tool for a conversation with the Mid-Atlantic community. And now I dare say we have viewership, regular viewers from Europe, from other, I mean, it is incredible what has happened, and people write in with questions, and we have actually another taping session coming up in April, I believe, and so we'll be compiling more and more questions, and then I started inviting some guests in, and so my dear friend and fellow casting director, Ann Chapman, and sometimes partners, we cast the location casting of the film Loving we did together, and she and I will go back and forth and banter, and because we've known each other for 20-some-odd years, it is so fun, and we just giggle and, you know, high-five. You can see it, and but what it is the general goal is if sharing our experience or even having these conversations with a camera witnessing that, if it benefits anyone else in our area or outside of our area, be a more confident artist, to reflect on their artistry, et cetera, or even raise the bar of what's going on, then we've succeeded in my mind.
Absolutely.
So I would encourage anyone to certainly subscribe, but we've gotten amazing feedback. You know, some people literally say they wake up and the first thing they do, they drink their coffee and they watch one of our videos, and that is their daily routine, and they, you know, and they get to see how long my hair is. You know, because I go short to long.
Well, I have to say, I've seen a recent photograph that you sent me, and I think you're as beautiful as ever.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It seems to me it is a, I mean, I hear what, also that it saves you from having to repeat it over and over. But think of all the people. The internet and YouTube, of course, have become a way of life for everyone, but especially people who are trying to, who was it that told me this? George C. Scott's wife. I can't think of her name now. Anyway, she told me once, you know, the actor must always be learning and learning and learning. If you're not in class, you got to be watching and learning. And that it's a lesson I've never forgotten. Colleen Dewhurst. So your YouTube series, because it is a series, as you've mentioned. It's there. It's there for people to go by topic, by the way. In other words, an actor wants to find out a specific thing or brush up on a specific thing or learn about it for the first time, it's quite clear what it is this video is about, and they can go and pick and choose and brush up as they will. Why don't we give that website now for to get to the YouTube videos? All right. Okay, then. And
the other thing, hello, that's really interesting about the YouTube is that the default but incredibly important is, you know, especially in the Mid-Atlantic and the Southeast, being a film artist, if you will, whether you're on crew or an actor, is a somewhat isolating experience. You know, you go to auditions and see fellow actors, and you go to set, whether you're working behind the scenes or in front of the camera, and you see everyone. But the time in between gigs can be very, very long and very isolating.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is that these videos are somewhat of a catalyst of community in our education department. That's why we, you know, pop up in Wilmington and pop up in Atlanta and spend a long weekend or a week or even 10 days. further on their craft, and it really is instigating things. And, you know, the YouTube channel is completely philanthropic. I mean, I pay, you know, to have it produced. I hire the DP and the editor and all of that, and it's free. It's offered free to everybody. And so it's just one of these things I've always felt so passionate about and really think it. Hopefully it helps. Hopefully it makes a difference. And, you know, I'd love to hear from people if
they
think it does, frankly.
Absolutely. And I meant to make that point, even though you need to subscribe, I think you mentioned, it is free. And, I mean, it's a gift to anybody who is, especially those who are interested in actually being a part, whatever hat they wear, of film, television in particular. But even for those who are not necessarily interested in being in the profession, but they may have families and friends, and they're trying to understand. I was very fortunate my parents understood my love of television and theater and film, so they were very supportive. But not all performers have that. So they could, even the performer or the DP or whatever can say to a parent or doubting uncle or whatever, watch this video and you'll see what I'm trying to do here. What do you think?
I mean, who doesn't experience that in their life?
Exactly.
I do daily, but every other human being also deals with that. And so we get quite philosophical sometimes, and I always am very drawn to the intersection of discussing something that is both philosophical as well as pragmatic. And that seems to be, you know, kind of our safe zone, if you will. So we'll really talk about something that's seen a bit esoteric, and then we'll put it into practice as a human sometimes, not just as an actor, but as a human. And I think that's one of the things I think I'm actually most proud of with this series. It's not just a how-to. It's not a 1, 2, 3. It's a thinking process that we're also exploring.
Exactly. It's, as you say, it's life lessons. It's about, I mean, and certainly making movies and any art form, but movies and television, when the camera shows everything, I think you can't hide from the camera. Therefore, your life, your personality, your character, all of that, your experience feeds into what the camera shows the rest of us. Yes.
And we've developed, you know, a handful of exercises. We're not, you know, we're not psychotherapists, nor do we tend to be. But I have, for nearly 30 years, been, you know, hired to kind of judge a character or a person at first glance if they belong into a film, if they belong into a world, and are they going to be kind and pleasant to work with, et cetera. So the persona class is really a check-in point where people can explore how they're perceived, who they are they presenting their true essence? Do they even know what their true essence is?
Yes.
And of course, things develop over years, change day to day, you know, but to get just a foothold and a point of reference to understanding that really helps not only actors, but I think humans in general. I mean, how do you portray yourself on Facebook? It could apply to anybody, you know what
yes.
I mean?
You know, it all comes down to not only knowing yourself, which is very important, but seeing yourself as others see you. We're going to have to take a break now. We're talking to Erica Arvold, the founder of Arvold, A-R-V-O-L-D. We will be right back to talk about some of her many projects. We hope we can get her to tell us some secrets. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Some well-known stand-up comedians are considered modern philosophers. George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, and Louis C.K., to name a few. Another is Bill Hicks, a truly great comic whose short life is documented in American, The Bill Hicks Story. Starting from humble beginnings in Houston, the film follows Hicks as he nurtures his craft in Texas, travels to Los Angeles to further his career, tours the United States, and then Great Britain. There, he becomes a national sensation through his uniquely acerbic, scorching, and insightful observations of the absurdities of the world around him. And us. Employing a mix of interviews with friends and family, footage of Hicks' performances, and animation, American paints a portrait of Hicks as a man who began as an entertainer, but found his calling when he realized that if he talked about headier ideas, infusing them with his sometimes caustic, always-in-your-face brand of dark humor, he could become an agent for change in the world. Hicks died of pancreatic cancer when he was only 32. A little-known comic in America, he came into his own overseas and became a megawatt outlaw star. The producers of this insightful doc seek to introduce America to one of its own greats, American, the Bill Hicks Story, not in theaters, Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My guest today is Erica Arvold, who is the founder of Arvold, A-R-V-O-L-D. She's casting director, producer, and director with 30 years of experience, as she's corrected me. And we've talked a great deal about the educational process, including her generous contribution to talent via YouTube videos and the series, etc. But we want to talk about some of her projects now. There's a TV series Turn. There's, of course, everybody knows about House of Cards and all excited. But I'd like to start out with Loving, because my grandmama took me, I used to drive her around, when just as that was my present, when the crazy Italians weren't all around. She and I'd take her wherever she wanted to go, or in the countryside. In any case, she took me to a house, said, "Stop, I want you to tell you something about this house." And she explained to me it was a mixed marriage, and they were facing a lot of hardship and difficulty in Virginia, and she wanted me to know that and remember it. And it certainly, I think, still affects my writing and my philosophy, etc., my politics. But years later, to be called in for Loving and to see the work, knowing the work of Erica Arvold, and then how Loving turned out, this is the first time I've had an opportunity to ask Erica how she felt about Loving. Now that's your turn.
And I knew it at the beginning, and my casting partner, Anne Chapman, was blue in the face saying, "Erica, this is an important thing to do. It's very important. It's a tiny movie, but we have to do it."
Yes.
And, of course, I agreed. And but throughout the process, I mean, I get so obsessed with the process and my job and, you know, making sure that, you know, the kids looked at one another as they grew up throughout time and made, you know, all of that, and that the family members and the best friends and all of the speaking roles, which we were responsible for, were really cast in the most perfect way possible, that there was no alternative other than that person. And I was very specific. However, I have to say, when we had the open call for speaking roles in Caroline County, which is where Richard were from, which is where your grandma probably drove you,
right? Exactly.
There was magic. I don't know how else to explain it other than the people who attended an open call, which is typically, you know, not necessarily the most positive experience in terms of it's a cattle call, you're looking for people, it takes hours of waiting, and it was so magical, and so many people who were truly related to the Loving family just would start chatting, and I don't know how to explain it. Everyone knew there was an unspoken magic that then lasted throughout the process, all the way through the distribution, all the way through. I was lucky enough to get to go to the Cannes Film Festival in France with the film, and it was one of the films in competition. And, you know, to the premiere here, to the premiere in New York, to the, you know, all of these things, just with such a positive feeling always. It was not a stressful, hard job. It was just this easy magic. I don't know how, but I think it's because because it was important, and I think there probably was some other reason that maybe I'm unaware of, but it changed. And I remember the first interview with the director that I had, and at the time, gay marriage was just federal acceptance of gay marriage, and support of gay marriage happened. And so we were talking a little bit politically, and it was very obvious that no one was on a political mission with this movie. It was about the people loving each other.
Yes.
It was a political story on purpose, you know, it was a reflective story.
Yes.
And whatnot. And then to see the landscape of politics change
while you
throughout the process while it was being made. And then all of a sudden, now it's more poignant than ever. And who would have suspected? And I think that in itself is also magical, you know? And so it's just been, it literally has been and will remain a highlight of my career.
Wow.
And the people, the subject matter is what we're talking about now, but the people involved, from the producer, from the writer-director, every single person had unbelievable professionalism mixed with that little bit of magic and had fun knowing they were doing something and contributing to something that was very important.
Exactly.
And the bar was incredibly high creatively, and so it just gelled. I don't know how often that happens, and I feel very lucky to have experienced it once in my lifetime, put it that way.
And Jimmy Cagney used to always say, you know, if you get three or four that you are so moved at being a part of it, then consider yourself lucky. But this is, you know, and I, you know, thanks for reminding me about Caroline County, because obviously my driving my grandmama around was quite a long time ago. I'd forgotten we had gone for, she took me for a long ride that day. And yes, it was Caroline County. It's just, it's a beautiful country anyway. Well, all right. Most people know about the big projects that you do. Like I mentioned, House of Cards, fabulous. And Turn, which is also a part of Virginia's history now. And I do want to talk about that. But first, give us some idea of what's the day-to-day at Arvold. They can't all be House of Cards, are they?
It's wonderful, and I feel incredibly grateful that we have opportunities to do these wonderful shows, of course. But we also love doing local projects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are times that I really are the Richmond Airport, Charlottesville Airport.
Oh, yes.
You know, help produce. Cast a spot for Charlottesville Airport. We did Richmond Airport a couple years ago as well. And recently there was a Super Bowl ad local in Lynchburg that we cast for Carillion. And we did a Montpelier ad with people who were in still photos. So, you know, you can look at the picture, the nice pretty color picture in the magazines, and we found those people to be in it. And, you know, there are so many jobs that we help either with the production or help find the actors, including museum films and whatnot, that are much more local, that aren't as fancy schmancy as House of Cards or Turn on AMC. But that really is our day to day work, and we love it. And it's really fun because it gives opportunities to actors and even PAs and other crew members to get some experience on maybe a smaller scale project, you know, and then they kind of start a career. There's been a couple people. I mean, one of my favorite things, and certainly in Chicago when I lived there and worked from there for years, was watching actors grow. And I used to have an intern named Hannah. She goes by Hannah James, and she's now a series regular on Mercy Street.
Oh,
and
wow!
It's just so exciting to see that, you know. She was my intern.
Yeah.
You know, she helped buy a file things, and now she's doing what her dream is. And another one of our employees now is works at Pixar. And, I think that also it ties back into education in a lot of ways too,
yes.
Because I, you know, these interns and these assistants that I've had, and the interns are always through university programs, so they're usually UVA or VCU, and sometimes Longwood and some other colleges, but, you know, they go on to do big things,
yes.
And I'm so proud of them, and that's how I feel about actors and other film artists that take some of our classes, is, you know, they go on to do really big things, and it's so nice to receive an email to say, you know, oh my gosh, I booked this job, and I, you know, took your class 4 months ago and applied all these things, and I don't know, maybe that's the daughter of a professor talking, but it really is fulfilling, you know? That's a necessary part of it, and certainly casting these local projects is a parallel, because I remember when I was doing Lincoln, the Steven Spielberg Lincoln, in the middle of it, we had a little bit of a respite, and I took a local commercial on. And I remember the director and writer of the local commercial came into my office, and at the time, Lincoln wasn't even being referred to as Lincoln. It was very, very under the radar. We couldn't say exactly what we were working on. It was very secretive at the time. But in my office, I had all the black and white photos of all the real that I was matching.
Yes, I remember that.
And so with this small local project, the director and writer came in for auditions, and they kind of looked around the room but didn't say anything, because I always have pictures and paraphernalia. And a number of months later, after it was public that we were doing Lincoln, I remember the director called me and said, that's what you were doing project? How could you possibly do our project? And I said, that's my happy zone, is doing what they were thinking was a small project. I was thinking it was an incredible opportunity for people who were appropriate for that, as well as I was very happy to do Lincoln. But to me, one is not better than the other.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how popular it is, or how big it is, or how the budget's so big. Like, I like the process as much as the final product. And if I get to sit in a room with a writer and a director and talk about character and then, you know, see actors, I'm a happy, happy clam if that's the case, you know?
Absolutely. I remember once when I was in rehearsal doing a show for Bob Chapek, University of Virginia Heritage Theater, and it was taking a little longer. He was working with the other actors, and at one point the stage manager said, you know, Marcello's still waiting, and Bob, without missing a beat, he didn't even look at my direction. He says, are you kidding? Marcello loves the process. We could be here all day and he'd be happy. And it was true, but it is true if you love this. And another thing I love about you, Erica, as much as you are a directing, casting director for the actors, you never, ever, ever forget to mention the other artists in the film and television production. You seem to have an affinity for the people behind the camera and beside the camera, even the beginners, that I've always been impressed with, and so patient with. I've auditioned when you've had an intern that you were teaching. You know, we all just had a grand time together. They learned, and I did my best. And I just wanted to say that because I know a number of production people who've worked with you, and they've always said immensely impressive things. Even my good friend Peter, who's just been talking to you about a possible project. But let's do talk about Turn. Everyone wants to hear, is this indeed Turn's final season, or can you tell us?
It is, as far as I know, that is the case, absolutely. The it was the fourth and final season that was ordered, and that there's nothing contrary to that whatsoever. And it's been a really wonderful experience thus far. We just finished casting 404, which is the fourth episode out of the 10 for the fourth and final season. And there's an awareness that this is the final season, and it almost makes everyone kind of revel in it just a bit more than typical. And so it's been a really positive season thus far. And it's always been a positive show.
Yes.
Really, everyone's got, you know, the process down. I mean, it is a machine. A series becomes quite a machine, and a well-oiled machine at that. And, you know, there's always a couple new people here and there, and that's always good. You know about this study? I'm going to digress. Do you mind?
Not at all. Are you asking me?
Yeah, exactly. Fascinating study, and I wish I could tell you exactly NPR, but I'm not positive. They took a Broadway show, and they did kind of three scenarios of the people developing a Broadway show, and they took the group that had just had a hit and not changed anything about all of the people involved in developing the new show.
Mm-hmm.
They took all new people and put the top of their game, but everyone together in a room. So it was the same and then completely different. And then the third group were, mainly the same people, but they added a couple of wild cards in there, and maybe at least, I believe at least one head of a department that was new and unfamiliar with kind of the old regime.
Hmm.
And they found that to ensure the next Broadway most popular hit, that's
mm-hmm.
what they were trying to find formula to repeat this, essentially, is what they were after.
Sure.
And they found that not the same regime was absolutely not guaranteed for another hit. Brand new people that all at the top of their game who had never worked together before was not the magic ratio. The magic was the regime that knew each other that was great, but one or two or possibly even three, if I remember correctly, heads of departments was different, so that everyone was just a bit on their toes still.
Ah.
And I feel like completely unconsciously, and I think this is the way life turned out,
mm-hmm.
that every season of any show I've ever worked on previously has always been like that, because inevitably someone is not available or, gets another job or whatnot. But it's been like that in a really positive way as these 4 years of Turn have come into production. And,
sure.
And it's silly. And Richmond is unbelievable. The training, speaking probably in almost Virginia film office terms, but I so agree with it, the training that a television series provides crew is incredible, because it's not rinse and repeat in a an informal way. It is truly a practice again and again. And I think that going back to our YouTube videos, back to our education, is this film business
mm-hmm.
is a practice, whether it is a grip or a gaffer, or a director of photography, or a director, or an actor. This isn't a career where the end goal is, okay, now I'm that, and now I'll be hired for
mm-hmm.
that. It's like
mm-hmm.
a doctor. Doctor practices. A lawyer practices.
Yes.
And I think that we all as film artists practice, and that's really the gift that Turn has given us all here in the Mid-Atlantic, is the undeniable amount of practice that we get to perfect our craft as much as we're able to.
Exactly. That's a lesson for me, too. I appreciate that. I'm wondering, how much are you or any casting director involved in getting these projects to Virginia? Do you campaign for them? What do you, are you a part of that process?
Well, on occasion, I absolutely have done anything in my power to help bring the show here. I think the one thing I can speak directly to is, projects come to an area for many, many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those reasons are, there are amazing actors. We don't have to pay extra to travel all of our talent from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there are heads of departments with credits. They know how to run a casting department.
Mm.
We don't need to have another person. Or, this person is a wonderful grip and they can manage their entire department. And they know all of the nuances of, turning in budgets every episode. And it's not just about being on set and knowing what to do. It's about running a department. And essentially, you're a mini producer when you're the head of the department.
Yes.
So you're the producer of your department.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that regard, certainly I've shown people around. I've talked to them. I've, tried to do whatever song and dance needed to help encourage productions here and to assure them that there is amazing talent in the Mid-Atlantic region
mm-hmm.
and in Virginia. And I know what I'm doing when hired as a casting director
sure.
or when hired as a producer. And that's my contribution. And the film office does a tremendous job
yes.
to bring film. I think one of the most important kind of foundational aspects of bringing a project is location.
Mm.
You have to have somewhere to shoot. and, you know, the diversity of Virginia, from the gorgeous mountains of Giles County, where we shot in Shewell in October and November when the trees were changing, to the ocean front where you could do, you know, I think Captain Phillips was shot off of the coast there.
Yes.
You know, and there's so many different environments. And then, of course, in Richmond, as you know, we have, you know, a White House set.
Yes.
And we also have, you know, the Capitol.
Yes.
You know, in things that were really are transformed quite easily and have been transformed before, that you have a great diversity in locations here in Virginia, and I think that's one of the biggest calling cards for production.
Wonderful. One quick story. We're both digressing, but it's all the same point. I recently, because of another assignment, had occasion to go to the Richmond General Assembly, and of course I had been there, thanks to you, in Lincoln. And of course, that's what was in my memory, because it's so intense with Spielberg and Lincoln at the General Assembly in Richmond, Virginia, that was my memory of it. And when I saw it in its natural state, shall we say, I was all over again impressed with how much could be done with a film production company to create the ambiance, the atmosphere, the physical appearance of real American history. Tell us, how can actors, besides YouTube, how do they get seen by you? What do they do? The website, we know it's Arvold, but tell us, how do people, actors and production people, get to experience your experience?
YouTube channel, as well as arvold.com, the website, are wonderful starts.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one just like the email, period, just email info@arvold.com, and there is an auto reply that will give you way more information than you probably ever expected, but it does get very specific about if you're interested in education, here's where you should do. If you're interested in production, this is what you should do. If you're interested in acting, this is what you should do. Mm. So that's a wonderful, you know, direct way to get more information. Info@arvold.com.
All right. Excellent. I guess we have to go. Don't want to. I'm having trouble ending this interview. All right. We have been talking to the founder of Arvold, Erica Arvold herself, who is casting director, producer, and director, and has done many things all over America for actors all over the world and those in film and television production as well. We thank you so much, Erica, for being on the show today, and look forward to seeing you again sometime and talking to you anytime. How's that? My pleasure. All the best now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Not Fade Away would likely never have been made had it not been written and directed by David Chase, who enjoyed tremendous success with HBO's The Sopranos. This film was his passion project, a semi-autobiographical account of coming of age when flower power was in blossom. In Hollywood films, straight lines usually lead to tidy endings, but here we are focused on the arbitrary nature of life's offered path and the impossibility of perfection. Chase is known as a keen observer of important moments. He also loves and understands the power within the music of the 60s, an essential element in this story of friends forming a rock band and trying to make it big. But the path to be somebody is never an easy one, and human nature is a constant interference. This is the story of a confident young man beginning to discover there is no easy world where blissful dreams flower to abundance. Who is Not Fade Away for? For those who shared this special time. For those who experimented, who felt passion in the music, who would have changed the world with dream-perfect lovers at their sides, if only
We go on to other lives, but oh, what possibilities were once so real. Not fade away, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Choosing our denial. Climate, choice, immigrants. We can run or run for office. We can hide in pizza pies or big screen Trump lies. Or, despite our antebellum attorney general, get in the pink of peaceful assembly for justice and equality for all. We can be Earth's stewards, or watch our ship of state beached by Wall Street whales. We can fight for mutual respect, walk the walk, signs a plum, or, bearing bygone pom-poms, sigh at the demise of We Shall Overcome. We can band together against being banned, facing off conservative restrictions before the parade passes by with a farewell to welcoming arms, or we can get off the sidelines, renewed in the knowledge that America is not a part-time job, for civic, civility, and unity are the pillars of citizenship. We can regret not being the heroes of change we long to reflect, or courageously contribute to all hands on deck. We can accept the serenity of what we created but are unable to change, or change our projectile, remembering to let it begin with me, or settle for those who will never know the difference. We can choose to disgrace ourselves like a cyclical cicada infestation, or challenge what is past is prologue with the audacity of an open mind, the daring of a brave heart, and the fortitude of a moral march. Or we can feign non-duplicity with a despot who, after duping so many, is but a harmless joke, and watch America's greatness finally slip away under voter ID yoke. We can stand tall, proud descendants of Ellis Island invaders, bequeathing our children's children respect for Standing Rock and a multicultural legacy, as did immigrant George Morikami, or choose to either mock Obama sharing Pearl Harbor Memorial with Japanese Prime Minister Abe, or immigrant First Lady taking Madame Aki Abe to Palm Beach, Florida, Japanese garden, as though she'd never seen such a botanical before. Robert Frost, notwithstanding, walls, as a rushing to catch up polluted China knows, keep both within and without. From China we can learn, ignore the global call, or bound feet, banned thinking and family limitations yielded to immigration benefits, Marco Polo, Giacomo Puccini, and visiting Olympians. There is little that can restrain informed advocacy, restrict peaceful activism, or wall out a dream. The Underground Railroad saved men, women, and children from slavery without a single rail. We can choose the golden rule or red mapping, choose to deny lessons of a Trumped presidency. 1. Despite politicized Supreme Court, congressional obstructionism of President Obama, and a fourth estate mired in ratings war muckraking, we have a judicial branch of government still defending our checks and balances system and First Amendment rights against he who would be king. 2. The Women's March of January 21, 2017 was a massive repudiation by women and men of every heritage, creed, ethnicity, and persuasion of Donald Trump, the Koch brothers, religious and racial bigotry, and GOP war on women, and the world listened and joined us, as they had immediately after 9/11/2001. 3. The Moral Marches, travel ban, airport protests, and response of Republican voters in town hall meetings of GOP leadership prove we can still be the United States of America. Whether we deny climate change or climate change deniers, Trump and the company he keeps can never deny us the architecture of our character, the diversity of our arts, the music of our hearts, nor literature of our minds that preserve, protect, and defend the theater of our national soul. leaders of both major political parties need stop asking for votes by preaching to the choir, seeking political positions in private forums, and knocking at the doors of reversal in secret congressional conspiracy. Instead, follow your followers to the streets, for it is there that real patriots have taken the challenge of legitimacy of America's elections and victory for America's Constitution. Want to relieve Trump of his duties? Get in the way. Thank you. Now join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.